A podcast that takes on a variety of topics from pop culture to everyday life. I'm Chantel C. You can call me CC, and I'm joined by my partner in organizing, Denise.
Hello, hello.
I'm from across the pond.
I know. I'm in America now. I'm down a block in the White House and stuff. I can smell it from here.
Stay safe.
Hide your kids, hide your wife.
So, to begin our pop culture segment, I want to get into this thing that broke like yesterday or the day before. Michael B. Jordan. I feel like he was misquoted, maybe even misrepresented.
Oh, yeah.
But he was in a conversation with Issa Rae for Variety's TV show Actors on Actors. Mm-hmm. And Issa is kind of interviewing him, kind of having a conversation. And in that conversation, he said, quote, "I don't want to go out for any role that's written for African-Americans in the breakdown." Let's pause. That's what he said. He looks at Issa, who's like shaking her head, like, yup. Goes on to say, quote, "I want to only go for like roles written for white males. That's it. Me playing that role is going to make it what it is. I don't want any pre-bias on the character," end quote. Now, you know, that was the headline that this was kind of going on. And I think some people misunderstood what his point was. He was saying, as you can watch later in the interview, he was saying there are people writing these roles for Black people who are non-Black, right? Mm-hmm. And these writers are not all of them necessarily maliciously, right? But they're writing Black characters and they're not Black. They don't know anything about what it means to be Black. They're going on ideas and, of course, influenced by bias and stereotypes and so forth. And he's saying, I'm good enough to play anybody.
Right. And you also want a character with nuance. You don't want to be drug dealer number four. Like, right. At the end of the day, that's what people, if they are hating on what he's saying, they don't understand that when he says, I want to go out for a character written for a white man, he's just saying he wants to grow out for 95% of acting roles, as opposed to just the 5% of acting roles that are available. And
right.
The reason why Black Hollywood is so small is because they sit next to each other competing for the same roles all the time. You know, mm-hmm. Jada and Gabrielle Union and who else? So Solana Nathan, Nia Long. I mean, it's ridiculous how often they're in competition for the very same roles. And what he's saying is, I want a character that could be anything. Because me, as a Black person, I could be anything.
Right.
And I know that, but clearly Hollywood doesn't. But I'm gonna try to get to the point where they know it. I'm trying to infiltrate the system like that. And I love it. I think he could have phrased it better, though.
You know, and we won't really know until the full clips play. I think they'll show on June 19th and June 20th. So I try to be cautious and say, save your judgment.
Uh-huh.
Because I believe that what he's saying is actually really true, even though Black people may have disagreed. Similarly, or alternatively.
But also clearly he's not opposed to a Black movie. Dude was in Black Panther, right? He was in Creed. He was,
His start on The Wire. So
yeah, I mean, like he's
played Oscar Grant in Fruitvale Station.
Right. I mean, like, he's not against, like, embracing his Blackness. Like, he's in his acting career. Let's put it like that. Like, he's not, he's not looking for, you know, I'm going to be in the frat house. Like, he has had a variety of roles, and now he just needs something with depth. He don't want to get, you know, the role, and I need you to say, I don't want no more goddamn snakes on this goddamn plane. Shout out to Samuel L. Jackson, who I love. But I'm just saying, like, he don't want those roles.
Understandably. And what's interesting, though, is while this conversation was happening, this week, Black Americans specifically, were defending Ellen DeGeneres.
Oh, God.
So Ellen DeGeneres has a foundation called the Ellen DeGeneres Wildlife Fund. And for that reason, she traveled to Kenya and Rwanda last week. Mm. And she even met with Paul Kagame, Rwanda's president. he's no joke, but we'll save that for another time. And you know, she was posting, of course, regularly her pictures on Twitter and whatnot of her travels. She also chose to post a picture of her surrounded by several children in a rural setting. It was really odd. In the tweet that she posted the picture with, she just tweets, "Thank you to all of the amazing people I met on my trip who helped make it so special." Don't know why that's the caption for the picture with the kids. And she offers no further context to that picture. Like, it literally looks to me like she jumped out of a vehicle, was like, "Oh, take this picture," and then got back in the vehicle and left. Like, the kids aren't really sure who she is, obviously. They don't know why she's there. There's a lot of confusion, some smiles, some people not even, like, bothered. And some people were really mad about it. They called it poverty porn and voluntourism. Mm-hmm. And I just wonder, like, why isn't that clear to more people? Like, it's why does this have to be explained?
Well, I mean, like, when have they ever thought of going into a playground in the suburbs, taking a random selfie with people's white children? Do that. You take a random selfie with people's white children and put that on social media and see what happens. But there's this idea that you can take people's children's photos without their parents' permission and put it out there for the world to see without any context. It's really jacked up.
I mean, some people were actually saying, what's the big deal as long as she's helping them? Why do we assume that she's helping them? She has a wildlife fund.
She didn't even say she was helping them.
Right. She just said thank you to all these people. Well, she has a wildlife fund. She does. Her foundation is a wildlife fund. Let's just
yeah,
that's about animals.
Last I heard, we weren't wildlife anymore. Like, but that's the colonial position, right? Is that, you know, what's a little rape if they're getting fed? What's a little child endangerment if we built a house or two? Like, it really just said, you know, I mean, the British to this day talk about the railroads in India, some nonsense. They talk about, you know, what's a whole lot of, you know, genocidal slaughter when you got a railroad now? So thank you. You're welcome. You know, I mean, so there's the colonial position that any benefit that you give the natives warrants anything you take from the natives. So if that's a selfie, so be it.
Well, on that note, I'd like to mention two tweets from Kelechi Okafor, who's based here in London and has a large Twitter following, is very loud and chatty on Twitter. But I haven't read a tweet where she's lying. And in this breakdown, as she loves to do for you every day, she will break down something that maybe seems obscure. She tweets, "I am in no way saying that Ellen's motives are sinister. The picture was just mad unnecessary and also part of a pattern of using African suffering as a prop to uphold and incubate white fragility." Second tweet, "There is no trade-off in this world that is worth the integrity of these children, whether they're smiling or not. Quote, maybe they consented to the pic, end quote. It doesn't fucking matter. Power dynamics." So, you know, Kelechi, this is part of a larger thread where she really breaks down all of the problems with this picture. But Black people in here speaking the same truth. And this is what we try to explain. Just because a Black person said it doesn't make it right.
No. I mean, like, let me tell you something. I'm really glad I wasn't on these here internets when I was in my sunken place. I tell you that. Like, and I'm sure that on certain issues, I still haven't reached the promised land. The hope is that I will continue to evolve. Like, I don't think that there is just like one place in static. Right. As issues evolve, hopefully I will evolve. As I get more information, I'll grow, hopefully. Right. If I'm not dead. Right. The problem, though, is that there is this rush to save good white people. Right. Mm-hmm. Good trademark. Good white people. Mm-hmm. In the sense that there's this sense that if there are white people that are virulently racist, and it's actually part of the dynamic that's happening right now worldwide, not just in the States, because racists have come out the woodwork so intensely, and they're like, "I'm racist and proud," you know, that for someone like Ellen, who's been on the right side of history on so many things, when she does and problematic, even
forged.
Right, exactly.
Right.
When she does something problematic, there's a reluctance to say, "Yo, check yourself."
And, but she's always done things problematic. So
yeah, I mean, with the Nicki Minaj booty thing. This is not the first and only last time, because there's definitely this feeling among white liberals that as long as I play nice, I can play dirty, so to speak. So because I'm
people, or I can't too. Be checked, right?
Right. I'm people too. I'm at the cookout. So, you know, y'all saying the N-word, so can I. You know, this kind, it's a problem.
Yeah. Well, in the big crossover pop culture / political news of the week, Kim Kardashian, as Chris Hayes put it, is the first person to not have been humiliated after a photo op with the current U.S. president. I can't think of his name right now.
Yeah, he's still got a mouth. Who knows what he'll say about her?
Who knows what's happening? Mm-hmm. But what we do know is that 45, that's the president, has officially granted Alice Marie Johnson clemency. Kim Kardashian West met with 45 last week to talk about prison reform and other things, supposedly, but also specifically to talk about Alice Marie Johnson's case, who... Ms. Johnson was in a correctional facility in Alabama, in Aliceville, and she had one nonviolent drug criminal offense and was sentenced to life without parole for that first offense of a nonviolent crime. And she's already served 21 years of that sentence and was set free this week after he signed those papers. I saw some people talking on Twitter saying, you know, I can be happy for Ms. Johnson without being stupid. But I don't think it's that simple. Like, there's a lot to show here, right? There is 45 getting a photo op with one of the, even if you don't like her, she makes more money than most people in pop culture through her apps and so forth. Her husband is problematic AF. And is discussing slavery as a choice and is supporting him technically in statements, you know, in tweets. It is even said that she told him in conversation, Kim Kardashian West told 45 in that meeting that Kanye was contributing to more Black people coming over to the other side and supporting 45. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot at stake here, right? Also, the fact that she was working with Ivanka and Jared for several months on this case before she got to see 45.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so beyond the public support, there are things happening behind the scenes. And it's really frustrating considering Ms. Johnson has a team of attorneys who've been working to get her this justice for a long time. And some people were disappointed when she didn't wind up on Obama's list in 2016. When he released a lot of such people, right? When he granted clemency to a lot of people who were first-time nonviolent drug offenders. How do you feel about it?
I feel like this it's a huge problem. I'm very happy for the woman that was released, first of all. Let me say that, because that's her whole life.
Right.
On the other hand, this struggle about any of these issues that we fight for, labor rights, for prison reform, for reform of drug law, they don't have to do with one person. Mm-hmm. This idea to individualize a systemic issue is actually very dangerous. I mean, so the idea that, you know, her, you know, essentially supporting this very toxic presidency justifies the, and whatever the outcome of that may be, which isn't good for justice.
Mm-hmm.
Justifies the release of one person as if that's going to have any kind of like effect on policy, it's actually laughable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I feel like Kim is a problem on so many levels. Like, I really think, I just need her to be canceled. I need the presidency to be canceled too, but
that too.
Yeah, but it's, It's just really whack. The whole situation is really whack.
Yeah, I just feel like a lot of people were really excited about, and there's reason to be excited, right? This person has spent 21 years behind bars. She's a great grandmother. There's reason to be excited for her release. And at the same time, there's no reason to celebrate 45 or Kim Kardashian West in the same breath. But a lot of people felt like, okay, well, now they've done something they deserve. And I feel like they don't deserve anything.
Mm-mm. And then also, you don't get cookies for doing what you're supposed to do.
Right. That's exactly.
I mean, like, if you know what I mean? Like, if you spill drinks and then you wipe up the drink, you know, the whole room does not applaud you for wiping up
the drink. For wiping up the drink.
Like, that's just not how that works. I mean, the fact that she was in prison to begin with was the travesty.
Well,
and that is the effect of
life
policy.
Without parole.
Mm-hmm.
Life without parole.
Right.
Like, so like you can't overemphasize that aspect of it.
And the fact is that she is not atypical. That situation is not atypical. And the fact that they're not focusing on the situation that many people are in, the systemic issue, as opposed to, like, let's feed this one person and call it a game. I mean, like, isn't that all the Hunger Games is about? Like, it's all about this idea that, you know, so your family, your community, they're in abject poverty. They're just going to struggle. But one of y'all can make it. And not even all of y'all that we choose, but like one of y'all that fight amongst each other. I mean, it's a problem. I'm super excited about this festival. This is the Sister Spit Queer Festival, right?
Yeah.
And it's a variety performance somewhat because there's a lot of different performers coming together to make this show.
Yeah.
What is your name?
My name is Eric Abrogwa. Mm. You could call me my village name because I come from a tribe in Côte d'Ivoire, Ivory Coast, which is called Ebrie.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fisherman's village, and my village name is Jin Jew.
Jin Jew.
And it means warrior prince.
Queen, as even queens, and Eric. So please give a big, big hand to Eric Abrogwa.
What are you doing now?
Right now, what I'm trying to do is open the conversation regarding violence, stereotypes, and sexuality.
Mm.
I have lived in France for those past 13 years, and I've acknowledged something very striking. We are women, effeminate men, transgender. We are all being victim of micro-violence every day. At least as soon as you wake up and you walk out of your house, you have 20 microviolence words injected to you just before you take the hood to go to your office. And you're expected to be joyful, you're expected to be pleasing and to be happy.
Mm-hmm.
And we accept to be silent when actually back in the 90s, I don't know if you remember, we had like an epiphany of sexual awakening. Everybody was dancing, electro, and so on. I mean, that's what made me kind of crystallize my own sexuality, kind of, mm-hmm. in a way. And I feel like today we are going back to centuries of like of violence that we never knew was possible.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that passed, and then the trolls, the bigots, sort of came out of the woodwork in France with all their true their homophobic views. Yeah, right?
That was for me the moment where I said we need to do something, we need to take action, we just need to show that we're there and we're doing it. We're showing that we love Ashley. Mm-hmm. I discovered a South African artist with whom I worked. His name was Brett Bailey. Mm-hmm. And the exhibit was called Exhibit B. Mm-hmm. Sorry. And it was about the image of the colonized African. And we were in canvases holding up for 180 minutes. And all you had to do is give an openness in the view of your eyes to the person in front of you. That made me realize how much actually love helps. When you don't talk and your expression is just your eyes and you're just opening your heart to the person in front of you, it is a much more bigger challenge than anything. And why I'm saying that is because facing the bigotry, I decided the insult, the trolls, the thing, I decided to be much more in shorts, much more into a sexy slender than I used to be, because for me it is how I fight it. Even though sometimes I don't feel like being totally sexy, hell, I'm gonna be the sexiest possible ever,
right?
Because this is our war.
You're gonna claim the space.
This is what we need to do. We can't let people push us back in. It's like back in the days, like when they were talking about witch hunt, when people were dying, they couldn't.
We're the witches.
We're the witches now. So I was like, that's what got me started with BSS too. It was like, I need to take a stand for my rights. I'm not a pickup suitcase that you can just admire one time and just throw away when actually you got problems. And the reality that immigrants live in France is actually like going back to the dark ages. It's like we're literally back to slavery. I'm sorry to be so raw like this, but when you see the relationship between how we're treated, the condescendence between how we're dealt with, it is really hard.
Oh, it's super hard. I mean, like, so to get the French citizenship, my understanding is that you have to rescue children.
Exactly.
From balconies.
Exactly. Because you're not a hero before that.
By doing parkour, you have to climb on the balcony four stories up and receive the child.
Exactly. Or you have to...
It's like the Hunger Games of citizenship.
It's literally it.
Y'all got Blade Runner citizenship.
That's what literally is questionable right now. It's been questionable for a long time, but it's questionable right now much more. I mean, when you look at the reality of how many, you know, back in 2017, everybody was touched by all those people that had died at sea. Aren't they supposed to be heroes too? I mean, can we question that a bit?
My name is Mauricio Yanes. I come from Brazil. I'm here in Vienna for a performance festival. I live in São Paulo, but I was born in Santos, which is like 1 hour away from São Paulo. It's a city by the beach, and it has one of the biggest harbors in South America. So it was, you know, 70s, 80s, 90s was a very effervescent city in a way, especially in the music scene and the gay scene. And I think that has shaped a lot what I am. I'm 44, so I was born in the 70s. So the workshop was about called Cracking Grammar. So it was about thinking. I work a lot with language, so I wanted us to think together about how language is genderized, racialized, and how to subvert that in a way, if possible. So we had like 4 days of discussing that, not via an academic point of view, but via personal experiences. Mm. So it was quite intense, you know, exposing oneself and talking about how, you know, all the insults you heard, how language itself can be offensive, or not offensive, but, you know, colonizing. And at the end, we built together. I mean, they had more agency on the decisions about the performance, but I hold myself responsible for it, of course. So we built together a performance. And it was very interesting in the process how, even though we were talking about conflicts all the time, we were afraid of how the exposure of these conflicts could provoke, in a bad way, the audience. And I was like, well, I think the audience is pretty much related to, you know, most of the audience probably has experiences that are much related to our own. So I don't think they will think when I enter holding the word schwul, like, mm-hmm. or, you know, you know, we use a lot of insults we heard during our lives. I don't think they're going to feel attacked by it. They will relate to our experiences, to their experiences. But there was this trying to tame the conflict before it even happens.
So that's really interesting, because queer was a slur, like when we came out, right?
Exactly.
So so queer was a slur, and now it's this thing that in some contexts is like bitch or the N-word that we've now reclaimed for ourselves, right? And I think that that process is different for different communities, that process of reclaiming.
Sure.
Like, what do you think about this reclaiming of words?
I think it's very important, and historically we've seen that happen, as you said. And I think the workshop was about that. It's very important for us, I mean by us, I'm saying like this abstract us, but, you know, I think it's important as a way to insert a virus within language.
Mm.
But at the same time, the words we use are still used as insults.
Mm.
And, you know, I tend to, like in Brazil, it's kind of a joke I make, like with my straight friends, male straight friends, and we call it, you know, we call each other amongst the gay or queer community, like, you know, you faggot, but, you know, appropriating the word. But then sometimes a straight friend feels very comfortable saying,
and it's like,
hello,
oh,
my fag friend. And
yeah,
like,
it's not for you.
It's not for you.
Yeah.
So it still happens, mm-hmm. but I think somehow it's ammunition for our battle. And I think dismantling or trying to revert language or dismantling the hierarchies or the patriarchal powers that reside in language is a way to change society, because language builds worlds.
Very impressed by both of them. It was like Maurice and Eric. Eric came to see my show,
uh-huh.
and he was like, oh my god, I never, like, the entire, like, because in my performance I'm very close to people, mm-hmm. and I had Eric, like, so close, it was so beautiful. I think it was the person that liked the person that, you know, mm-hmm. it was really also push giving me so much, mm-hmm. and I also mm-hmm. like his work, like, I'm really, it was, I've been performing not so often in queer festivals, but I think this festival was a very special one for me. I really liked it. I thought, I had the impression that it brought the community together. Mm. And they curated quite very special people. And also the thing with the queer base, it was really like, it was really like this show that some, I don't know, it doesn't matter, it's not like the form, is the dance is perfect, but the energy it had, mm-hmm. I was really touched. I don't know, I was touched about the festival. Probably it's because I'm working in contexts that are always like so, you know, it's not, of course everything we do is political,
right.
but mostly I'm trying to survive and sell my art, and you're in a very intellectual culture where you feel a bit like, and to perform in this other place where people are so giving so much, mm-hmm. and being critical. And I like what Mauricio says about, you know, about not being scared of going into conflict, and that kisses arts like conflict. Each of them had something to tell that was inspiring for me. And also to see what people who went to the festival. Mm-hmm. Was
a nice, okay, let's start.
No, I was thinking because I was very blessed.
So what is your name?
My name is Vesa Fernandez.
That draws, so there are queer festivals all around the world and queer performance groups all around the world. What do you think that draws queer people specifically towards the act of performance?
I guess it has to do that with your performance. You can perform, you can be who you want to be also. And I think it's also the urgency. I think that performance has to, it's so direct, you know, it's in space and time, it's now, it works with presence. And I think queer people, it's a struggle. So the performance is the most direct way also to approaching the struggle. But I think you can also perform, the body, I think, maybe it's to also empower the bodies, you know, that are like, it has something, the body is there, it's flesh, and but it gives you the opportunity to perform the gender you want to have, or who you want to be, or ally.
In our final segment, what are we excited about? What are we looking forward to? Let's hear your brag. What you looking forward to? Let's go. And don't make it personal. Let's hear something for real.
Oh, goodness. I got to talk about something for real. Like, for real, for real? For real, for real, for real, for real? For real, for real, for real? Well, I'm excited about something that, you know, I had some friends that came over to Vienna, and it was professors and stuff, and I've become literate again. I'm reading books. It's amazing. So I'm really excited about some books that are coming out that I can't remember the name of because that's how my memory works. But
I'm literate, y'all. She promises.
I'm literate. And I'm excited about my discussion coming up about Children of Blood and Bone, which I read, which was, did you read it?
I haven't.
You gotta read it so we can talk.
I know.
I was literate now.
Okay.
Ask and read.
Oh boy.
Ask and read. So it was amazing. And what really touched me about that was at the end of the book, because it's a sci-fi book about magic and adventure and all that good stuff. And at the end of the book, she's just like, look, this is about some Black Lives Matter. Like, so she like calls out like Trayvon Martin and other people. And she was like, if you can relate to these people that are being persecuted for who they are in this context, then you need to come with me on this. Mm-hmm. And I love that because a lot of times with writers, they're afraid to make that leap. This was her first novel. She was not afraid to make that leap. So it's not necessarily in the future, but I think it's kind of like opened me up, that and the Binti series, which was everything. Did you read that? Girl, apparently people be writing out in this. Like, what? Black folks are in sci-fi, yo. Absolutely. In ways, they got me reading again. So, between that and the Binti series, apparently Amazon's going to get all my money. On my Kindle. Like, let's just be real.
It's happening.
because I can't own physical books. I live in an apartment. Let's be real. But you do that. You got a whole room in your joint. You do that. But yeah. I'm
dedicated.
You dedicated like that.
But I also have 10 books out from the library right now. So I do a mix. And I got my Kindle. And I got my Audible.
Okay. Okay. Well, I'm going to be the hipster talking about, let's digitize everything, boo. Let's
I don't believe in it. I got to have my handhelds.
Yeah. What are you excited about? What are you looking forward to?
So there is a thing happening here in London called Decolonizing Sexuality Festival. It's taking place over the course of the weekend, Saturday and Sunday. It's been organized by women of color, some of whom I know. Some of the people who will be offering things are people that I've worked with myself. And it's taking place at SOAS, interestingly enough, at the university. And it looks like it's really, 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 really going to be amazing. Unfortunately, I'm not going to be able to make it, but I look forward to talking to the organizers and the people who are contributing to hear about it. They describe it as, quote, an investigation of the intertwinement of sexuality and our various identity markers and the impact and legacy of colonialism, all while centering the voices and experiences of people of color. They're going to have panel discussions, workshops, film and art screenings, stalls for food and artisan work that you can take with you. It looks like it's going to be amazing. I hope that it's a big success. And if you're listening and it's Saturday the 9th or Sunday the 10th and you have time, you should definitely check it out. Other than that, to be really, really, really honest, I'm kind of looking forward to finally watching this new season of Arrested Development, because the last two seasons have kind of been disappointing, and I'm an Arrested Development old school fan. And I hope that they found their way back to what Arrested Development used to be.
You know, when that happens with me in series, I give up. I'm just like, look, I have my memories. Don't corrupt my, I don't need you corrupting my memories. There's some series I have never gone back to.
But let me tell you what series, I don't think you stayed with it, I'm not sure. But let me tell you what's dropping today. Wow. So I'm behind on a lot of things because there's too many things to watch and there's not enough time in the day. And I just recently caught up.
Read all the time, that's what's up. Let's be real.
I just caught up with Sense8. And I was mad because I knew it was canceled, right? And the cliffhanger at the end of season 2, I was like, oh, hell no. I am calling Netflix myself. And then I was like, oh, let me go on Twitter first. Go on Sense8 Twitter to find out that they're going to close the story and it drops today.
Today. Yes.
Today. That's how lucky I got. I just finished season 2 a week ago. I didn't have to go through any of the pain and... It's happening. Sense8, I love the show so much for so many reasons.
It was great.
It's really great. I know it was hard for some people to get into and some people gave up, but if you can get through those first 3-4 episodes, you'll grow to love it. Especially if you're queer, you'll really love it. So
how queer people taking up over the whole situation? Okay. So, but it was great. But it was season 2. The first thing that put me off about season 2 was how are you going to replace a whole black dude? A whole one. You're just not even going to mention that joint.
It didn't mention it. But they had actually finished, they had just basically finished recording the holiday, the whatever they called it. I don't think they called it Christmas, but the holiday special, which was basically wound up being the first episode of season 2. And they had to redo it all because old dude wound up showing his ass. And apparently they never really talked about it, but they're, according to some tweets from a few folks, you can safely assume that he was either homophobic or transphobic. And that's why he got that curb seat.
See, like, why do people miss their blessings on some homophobia? They miss their blessings. I tell you what, I'm here in DC for Pride Week, and so, you know, you may see me again, you may not. Who knows? Well,
if you'd like to keep up with us, you can follow us on Twitter at The Queer Truth. We'd love to hear your thoughts on some of the things we've discussed today, so feel free to get at us. And if you can, drop a dime or two, patreon.com/The Queer Truth, and help us to keep going. Until next time, peace out.